Was dabei? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Nara. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, 12th chapter, text number 7.
Matur garbhagato virah satada bhrugunandana dadarsha purusham kanchit dahyamano stratejasa matur garbhagato virah satana bhrugunandana dadarsha purusham kanchit dahyamano stratejasa
matu. O son of Bhrugu, Shaunaka, when the child Parikshit, the great fighter, was in the womb of his mother Uttara and was suffering from the burning heat of the Brahmastra thrown by Ashwatthama, he could observe the Supreme Lord coming to him. Shri Radha Kunjibhaya Shri Gaunitaya ki. Purport was given by Srila Prabhupada. Death generally involves remaining in trance for 7 months. A living being, according to his own action, is allowed to enter into the womb of a mother by the vehicle of a father's semen, and thus he develops his desired body. This is the law of birth in specific bodies according to one's past actions. When he is awake from trance, he feels the inconvenience of being confined within the womb, and thus he wants to come out of it, and sometimes fortunately prays to the Lord for such liberation. Maharaj Parikshit, while in the womb of his mother, was struck by the Brahmastra released by Ashwatthama, and he was feeling the burning heat. But because he was a devotee of the Lord at once appeared himself within the womb by his all-powerful energy. And the child could see that someone else had come to save him. Even in that helpless condition, the child Parikshit endured the unbearable temperature due to his being a great fighter by nature. And for this reason, the word viraha has been used.
Om ajnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya Chakshuh Meelitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
When the child Parikshit, the great fighter, was in the womb of his mother Uttara and was suffering from the burning heat of Brahmastra, he could observe the Supreme Lord coming to him. By reading from the chapter Birth of Emperor Parikshit, as we have heard earlier, Ashwatthama was released by the request of Draupadi and Yudhishthira, and here he is again. Ashwatthama is here again with his Brahmastra, trying to kill the last Shishu in the Pandava dynasty, last child. He wanted to be sure that if Kauravas don't win, at least the Pandavas don't survive. They should be finished. Why should the Pandavas flourish? That was his envy. So, Ashwatthama had to face the defeat in the battle of Kurukshetra. After which, in the name of being loyal to Duryodhana, he wanted to see that Pandava dynasty is completely vanquished. Here in this particular verse, we find the Brahmastra is now entering the womb of Uttara. So Uttara has come running to Krishna, begging Krishna, please kindly save this child. So Uttara is praying, and of course the Lord is also entering the womb, as it is explained here. On one side, the child Parikshit saw the Brahmastra entering to burn him to ashes. On the other side, he is seeing the Supreme Lord coming to him. So it's a very, it's like the climax of the whole chapter that is being explained in this particular verse. Generally, whenever there is some material inconvenience, it is quite likely to affect one's spiritual consciousness. Because, just like imagine, we are going in a train. And the train, sometimes in the midway, it's a long journey, already it's a 30 hours journey. And if the train stops somewhere in the midway, not in a very nice lush green forest, but near a sugarcane company, where they produce sugar. Already it is stinking, but the train stops there. On a hot sunny day, when the time is around 12 o'clock noon, and there is a fiery wind blowing everywhere, even after all the windows are open and the fan is on, still the wind is really pinching your body. And it is stopping practically for 4 hours. And you also find the train is heavily crowded with, overloaded with people due to some holiday, summer vacation or something. Lot of crowd. And all kinds of low-class people are bringing their luggage and trying to occupy, encroach on other people's place to sit. And they are making all kinds of noises and they are spitting tobacco here and there. And you happen to be in such a train. It's hot. It's a miserable situation. And all non-devotees reading all kinds of dirty magazines, talking all rubbish all around you. And the train stops for 4 hours and moves for about 2-3 minutes, again stops for another 4 hours. So how would you feel? So such a material circumstance can certainly affect our spiritual consciousness. There's no doubt about that. Because we become influenced by the situation around us in this world. Although we know the Atma, the soul, is transcendental, the soul is beyond the three modes, the soul is pure. Despite knowing all this philosophy, at that time, when we are faced with such inconvenience, it's very difficult for us to be Krishna conscious, remember Krishna. So same is true with the dangers also. We are talking of an inconvenience, we could talk of a danger. When there is a danger, how many times do we remember Krishna in danger? Most often, we may try to rectify the situation ourselves by using the best of our ability and not probably pray to God at the time of danger. Like it's a true story of a man who was not a serious devotee. He was like chanting one round occasionally. But his wife was a very serious devotee, initiated devotee. This is a story from abroad. So one day he was going in one of his new vehicles, a huge kind of van kind of thing, newly purchased. So he was going. Due to some mistake, the railway gate was not closed. Sometimes there is a neglect on the part of the railway people. So it was not closed. So this fellow went across the railway line and somehow some part of the vehicle got stuck, and because of which he could not move the vehicle. So he was trying his best to move the vehicle. At the same time he saw a train coming very fastly. So now he was in two minds, whether to jump off the vehicle and save his life or to, you know, somehow or other try to get the vehicle out. Somehow he felt that maybe I will be able to get the vehicle if I apply the full pressure on the accelerator, and he tried his best. In the meantime, the train approached so close, now it was too late for him to jump out also. So you can imagine what must have happened. Of course, the train, they put a sudden brake and it hit the vehicle, and the vehicle toppled several times. It took several saucers. At last he was taken to a hospital and he survived somehow. Otherwise he would not be there to tell this pastime, tell this event. Anyway, so he said to his family members that, you know, when I first saw the train coming, you know, close, that time I was praying to Krishna that I want to, you know, remove this vehicle off. But as the train approached closer, I was mostly depending on myself only. I just couldn't think of Krishna at all. He said, when I was overthrown, I just couldn't think of Krishna. The Mahamudra didn't come out of my mouth, he said. And the family members chastised him for that. What is the use of... And he was telling, the thought that was most prominent in my mind was my wife's form. I was thinking of the wife and the children. So he was thinking, now this train is going to knock me out. Now who will protect them? Now who will take care of them? That was the thought, that was last thought, he said, going in my mind, I clearly remember. After which the train hit the vehicle. So his wife told him, now you start thinking of Krishna now, instead of thinking of us, family members. So, in times of such crisis and dangers, it's very difficult for one to remember Krishna. One of the result of being put in a predicament or a most inconvenienced situation is going down of our consciousness, both in gross and subtle. One may indulge in gross misbehavior, or one may indulge in subtle misbehavior. Subtle misbehavior is forgetfulness of Krishna. One may tend to forget Krishna. The easiest thing to do in this world. So, all of us at some time or the other will be put into either troublesome circumstances or dangerous circumstances in this world. And here you find Parikshit Maharaj put in a very dangerous situation where even his life is at threat. It is said, that in the material world, self-preservation is the first law. Preserving oneself. One wants to, every living entity wants to preserve itself. You will always find, whether it is a tiny insect, like you see, once a devotee saw a snail moving along the road, and he thought snail is such a dirty creature, impure creature. So he was wondering, why should the snail at all live? But still the snail is very happy living in this world, and he wants to continue living also. You may consider his body to be a miserable body, but he is happy. There are many different kinds of creatures which have bodies which give them varieties of sufferings, but they want to continue to live in that body. So that is why in Bhagavatam also it is said, Aho mahi yasi jantur jivita asha yata bhavan. It's called as jivita asha. Jivita asha means desire to live. Every living entity has the desire to live. Now when there is a danger, if someone desires to live and tries to oppose the danger or defend oneself, defend against the danger, that is not considered a very noble consciousness. Then when one wants to preserve one's body for a higher purpose of engaging in Krishna consciousness. That is more noble. Like here you will find, Uttara is ready to give her body up, but she wants to protect the body of her child Parikshit. Somebody may think, is it due to her motherly attachment that she wants to protect the child? Yeah. Even with the motherly attachment, still it is considered more noble, because it's a duty of the mother to protect the child. So, for the sake of sticking to the duty, she wants to protect Parikshit. But there is a much more deeper reason. In the Vedic times, a son is considered most important, because the son is going to continue the dynasty. Because he is supposed to take the rule of the world in hand and protect the people. And the whole world needs such an ideal leader. So preserving the child who is going to be a future ruler is certainly the duty of a mother. Apart from having the child as her own child also. For the welfare of the world. Welfare of the world means for upkeeping the Brahminical culture in the whole world. Ideal prince is needed. So her desire to protect Parikshit is very meaningful. It's understandable. Otherwise, in the Vedic life you will find people did not give so much importance to preserving their own body. Say for example, Draupadi is being disrobed in the public assembly by Dushasana. Now, for a woman, to lose her chastity is worse than losing her life itself. For a kshatriya, to face dishonor is worse than death, it is said, isn't it? So, a woman would lay down her life, but would not give up her chastity. This was the standard of the scriptures. So, why Draupadi prayed so intensely to Krishna? She wouldn't mind losing her life. But if she has to lose her chastity, that would be even worse. With that intention, she prayed to Krishna. And a woman deserves to preserve her chastity and seek help from all possible quarters for preserving that type of chastity. Similarly, you will see if a person, in the Vedic times, if somebody would give a word, if they could not keep the word, they would not even mind laying down their life. Like you find, Arjuna is saying, if I don't kill Jayadratha by this evening, I will enter fire. And he's preparing fire to enter the fire, you will see. Because people didn't consider the body more important than fulfilling or sticking to the dharma principles. Because the body is perishable. It is vanquished by the passage of time, always. It will be gone. But the upkeep of dharma, that actually follows the soul, birth after birth, it goes with the soul. From one lifetime to another lifetime. And based on your sticking to dharma or failing in dharma, one gets the good and bad results accordingly. So people were very strict about it. Every one of them. Like we can talk about everyone's dharma. Brahmana's dharma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. All categories of people. They were sticking to the dharma. So, otherwise you will find there are many kings you will find heading towards north for giving up their body. Or there are kings who are fasting unto death due to some reason. Like even in Bhagavatam you find Parikshit is going to the Ganges and meeting the saintly persons to inquire about the ultimate meaning and goal of life, and is ready to leave his body there without trying to defend himself, preserving the body. Preserving the body is meaningful and purposeful only as long as one is going to use that body for Krishna's service or for upkeep of dharma. Otherwise, simply preserving this lump of flesh doesn't carry much meaning. Lump of flesh and bones. That is the Vedic standard. You see, Shibhi Chakravarti, for example, was cutting some portions of his body, like thighs, to offer to the dove, because he considered the dove and the, the eagle, both of them to be his own citizens. To keep his word, he was ready to cut more and more and more of his body to a point where he would even die. He was ready for that. So in this way, it's clearly understood that in Vedic life, people were not at all afraid of laying down their life, giving up their body. It's not a very, women were entering into fire when their husband's body was funeral pyre was burnt, isn't it? In order to attain the same destination of the husband. So they were ready for that. Kunti and Madhuri, they had a competition. Who will enter the fire? They both, not that, you know, I will push you into the fire. No. They both wanted to enter the fire. And ultimately Madhuri convinced Kunti that you are more mature. You can take care of the children very nicely and you can raise them in, with good sanskars. So you take care of the children, which is duty. And I will enter the fire, which is also a duty. So we both will perform our duty and by that the dharma will be upheld. That is the ultimate goal. Whether you win or I win is not the main point. Dharma should win. That is very important. We should keep up the dharma. That was the goal of people in the Vedic times. So otherwise, generally the living entities, they try for self-preservation. Which means, you know, first I want to preserve myself. If somebody troubles me, I want to counter-attack or I want to defend myself. And after I am preserving myself, I am quite cool now. Then I want my relatives and friends to be preserved. And nobody should do anything to them. And then I want a shelter where first I want sustenance and then I want shelter for protection. So sustenance is food, you know, water and clothing and all that. And protection, we have a house. Then anybody living in this house and my house and property, I will protect. I will preserve it. And anybody who encroaches, I will attack. So in this way, you will find the self-defense or self-preservation manifests in this way, in a very small way, in a person's life. And then later on, a person considers himself as a part and parcel of the country. So then they fight with the other country. India fights with Pakistan. Pakistan fights with India. Like that. So, but those who know dharma of the soul, those who are on the platform of soul, they go beyond all these things. They can know actually whatever trials, troubles that may come in our life. I am not the body, I am the soul. And these kind of troubles may be, you know, may have to be faced by me because it is the will of providence. It's a will of providence. Will of providence means by arrangement of nature according to our own karma. The reactions come at particular period of time. And one should be ready to face them. So one of the first things that a devotee should do when faced with this kind of situation, like you see here, Parikshit, on one hand, was suffering the burning heat of Brahmastra thrown by Ashwatthama. On the other side, he was observing the Supreme Lord coming to him. So both these things are simultaneously happening. So that's what should happen to us also. Like in our lives, when you are put into a terrible inconvenience or any kind of very difficult situation or dangerous situation, one should immediately pray to Krishna for help. Like, you know, once Hamsadutta Prabhu, when he was in Germany, at that time the German government was giving a lot of trouble to ISKCON there. And Srila Prabhupada used to write letters asking, how is the situation now? So once Hamsadutta Prabhu wrote back saying that, Prabhupada, the situation is getting worse. It's not getting better. Our relationship with the government is getting more and more worse. Because they have been coming to ISKCON temple for raid several times. They have done a lot of persecution of devotees. They want to literally drive us out. They don't want us to continue there. Why? On some flimsy grounds that devotees have made some collection for doing their preaching. That was the only reason the government could give. And further, they want to sack us completely. And in fact, they had 8 lakh Deutschmark, DM they call it, Deutschmark, which is German. 8 lakh Deutschmark ISKCON had in its account. And that whole money was taken away, usurped by the government. So devotees were completely broken down because they had earned this money with a lot of hard work by distributing books and collecting donations. Now devotees were thinking, let's leave Germany and go back. My Prabhupada had sent Hamsadutta Prabhu there saying that you should go back and give encouragement to devotees and continue distributing books and preaching there. So Hamsadutta Prabhu wrote a letter, very meaningful letter in response when he went there. So in that letter he says, Dear Srila Prabhupada, I pray to Krishna that he gives me the right kind of intelligence by which I will be able to combat these rascals, he says. At the same time, if Krishna wants, he can reverse the situation in 1 minute, if he wants. The whole scenario may change, government may become favorable, and everything becomes nice. And government may even give us support for preaching and everything. And if Krishna does not want, even in our entire lifetime, if we keep on struggling to make the government officials understand our mission and make them understand the glory of your mission, the Srila Prabhupada's mission, and how wonderful welfare activity we are doing for the people, even after endeavoring an entire lifetime, they may never come to their senses to understand what we are trying to do. It's possible that they may not understand. But he writes, but in any case, Prabhupada, I am extremely grateful to you for engaging me, for awakening me in the path of Krishna consciousness, which is the immortal activity of the soul in the immortal platform. At the same time, I am ready to endure any amount of difficulty, come what may, either today or for 1 year or for the entire lifetime, in order to establish the mission of Lord Chaitanya here in Germany. I would do it unhesitatingly, without losing enthusiasm. So he writes this letter to Prabhupada. Very wonderful letter. So this gives us a clue how a devotee should face the troubles and dangers in life. So this letter has multiple lessons to learn. One is, here he says, I pray to Krishna. One should always pray to Krishna because we are very weak. We are very weak to do great things. Because Jiva is Kshudra, very small. And Krishna is Vibhu, is very great. If Krishna wants, things can happen which a Jiva cannot accomplish by his tiny endeavor. So one should first pray to Krishna as he prayed. And at the same time, one should also be aware, if Krishna wants, he will reverse the situation. Whatever troubles I am facing now, immediately Krishna can reverse the situation in one moment. Or if Krishna doesn't want, it may go on for a long time and I have to go on struggling or tolerating. I have to just go on. Sometimes you see that you are put into inconvenience and you have to tolerate it. Like I was telling you, 4 hours you are sitting in the train on a hot sunny day. And then when the train starts moving, immediately you are, your mind starts smiling. You feel happy. And that lasts only for 3 minutes. Again the train stops for another 4 hours. Sometimes the problem is there is an uncertainty. If you really know that this train is going to be here for another 50 hours, then you can get down, you can walk down even 10 kilometers, go to some bus stop, take a bus, or go back to your place from where you started or whatever. But many times there is uncertainty. You don't even know also whether it will move or not. A little it moves and stops. So there are many uncertainties and inconveniences in our life which come, and we do not have solution immediately, and we have to face them. So, as he says here, that even if Krishna keeps this problem with me for the entire life, I am ready to face it. Just see his determination. And then he is telling that he is appreciating, he is very grateful to Srila Prabhupada for awakening him in Krishna conscious knowledge. And he is also ready to continue to maintain the enthusiasm to propagate the mission. Prabhupada. So, in this way, prayers, like Uttara is praying to Krishna, and immediately Krishna is offering help. Draupadi prays to Krishna, and immediately Krishna offers help. So, prayers go up, blessings come down, it is said. So, prayers are extremely potent and extremely powerful. In fact, amongst Christians, they have mass prayers in order to cure diseases of people. And you will find by mass prayer they have healed some of the diseases which are incurable also for certain people. Because the prayers have a tremendous power. Collective prayers have a collective power. Individual prayers have individual. Individual's prayer also is heard by Krishna and Krishna responds in return. And there are innumerable examples we can give from the Shastra. Devotees praying to Krishna and Krishna immediately responding. Like Gajendra offering prayers. So, here Uttara is offering prayer and Krishna is coming here with his gada, rotating his gada, he is going round and round the womb and protecting the child Parikshit in the womb and not letting the Brahmastra to act. Also, we have to be aware of the philosophy. Like Krishna says, you know, Mamchi Yoga Bicharena Bhakti Yogena Sevate Sagunan Samati Titan Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. Devotional service is performed on the platform of immortality or Brahma Bhuta platform, which is beyond the material world, which is beyond the three modes. And all the troubles and inconveniences we face are all within the three modes, always. So, one of the things that we tend to forget is the most fundamental philosophy. I am not the body, I am the spirit soul. We don't remember this. So Krishna tells Arjuna also. But Arjuna, like he says, Dehino Smita Dehe, subsequently he tells him that even if you forget this fact for some time, remember that your suffering is only temporary. It comes, it stays, and it goes away. At best what can happen, at worst what can happen, you will lose your body, and you are not the body anyway. The worst thing that can happen to Parikshit here is he may lose his body, but the soul will again go to another destination and get another body. We are many times afraid of losing our body, but sometimes we are afraid of the pain involved, not necessarily only losing the body. If we can lose the body without the pain, we would probably be more happy. But the pain involved is also very much frightening us. So, naturally, whenever we are faced with danger, should a devotee take an action or not? This question may come. Should a devotee leave to Krishna? Because you will hear two versions. Many people talking, like, you know, there is a story often they say, like one fellow, he needed God's help. So he was crying for God when he was in danger. Oh God, save me, save me. And then Lakshmiji saw that Vishnu left his place in Vaikuntha and he immediately ran to help that fellow. But within a very short time, Vishnu came back. Lakshmi asked, what happened? Did you save the devotee? And Vishnu said, no, no, no. He called me first, but later on he started helping himself. So I thought I am not needed, so I came back. So this story often people say in order to tell others that, you know, this fellow didn't depend on the Lord completely. He didn't have sufficient faith in the Lord, because of which the Lord did not go to help him. So some people say like this. So he started depending on himself. That's a mistake, some people say. But there are others who say, God helps those who help themselves. Yeah. So one should endeavor to help oneself as far as possible. One should not disturb God for every small thing. But at the same time, when things go beyond control, one should depend on God. This is another category of people who say this. So where does a devotee stand? What has Prabhupada taught us? Prabhupada, in all circumstances, Prabhupada wanted devotees to know these two things simultaneously. You should know that Krishna is in control and we should do the needful. Both. You have to be aware that Krishna is in control. Whatever Krishna says should happen, will happen. But I will do the needful to fulfill my duty. Like when Prabhupada was in the planet, there were many devotees who were very afraid that Prabhupada is very ill. He may leave the body any time. So they wanted to pray to Lord Narasimhadev, they wanted to pray to Krishna to prolong the life of Prabhupada. Now, an ordinary living entity has a tendency to preserve itself, and once he has preserved itself, then his desire is to prolong his life. And if he is able to prolong his life, his desire is to make things so better that he will not have to suffer while living a prolonged life. So, which means, you know, that living entity always tends to want to live eternally. He wants to, he always have a tendency to want to live happily forever, unlimitedly. That's for ordinary living entity. But as far as pure devotees are concerned, their presence on the material world is most important for the welfare of all the living entities. So there, extending 1 minute or 1 year or 10 years for a pure devotee is so valuable for every living being. So all living beings praying for the welfare of extending the life of a pure devotee is very meaningful. So all devotees want to pray. You know what Prabhupada told them? He told them, you can pray to Krishna that if it pleases you, you can extend the life of our spiritual master. Like that you can pray. So Prabhupada said, you have a strong desire to pray, you may pray, so if you want. But ultimately you should leave it to Krishna. That's what Prabhupada said. That is the ideal standard. So our philosophy teaches that we should do our part also. We should take responsibility in offering prayers. Like, you know, when Prabhupada was in Delhi once, he was giving a lecture. So one man came and told Prabhupada, Swamiji, you know, nowadays we find, you know, there is no good sanskar. No. Everyone is troubled by kama, krodha, mad, lobha, moha, matsarya. It seems that everyone is committing all kinds of sins. So Prabhupada told him, then Prabhupada quoted from Rishabhadev, Gurur nasasya, Tvajaro nasasya, Pita nasasya, Janani nasasya, Daivam na tatsya, na padhishya sasya, na mochiye, yat samupeta mrityam. Prabhupada quoted it and said, it is the duty of the mother, father, you know, relative, guru, to enlighten the dependent in what is right and what is wrong and help them to tread the right path. So they should not fall off. So they should take responsibility for their lives, everyone. And that's a ultimate responsibility, Prabhupada said. And it is a duty to save the dependent from death and send them back to Godhead. But this man wasn't leaving the point. He continued saying that, but Swamiji, why has nature created us like this? Why has nature made us in this way that we become swayed by all these bad tendencies? It seems to me that, you know, it's all beyond our control. Ultimately, you know, wherever nature pulls us, we have to go, you see. You know, he was telling. But Prabhupada flatly refused. He said, just look at my American boys and girls disciples. They were, you know, intoxicators. They were engaging in illicit sex. They were eating meat and drinking liquor. And it was a daily business. Now they have given up all that. How they could give up all that? Because they have taken it up with full determination. They have taken responsibility that we have to give it up. And Prabhupada said, you are saying that nature is created like this. Yes, nature has made you a dog. But you don't have to remain a dog. You should try to become a human being from a dog by taking responsibility for every one of your actions. Prabhupada said. So, we have to take responsibility in every situation without blaming Krishna. Without pushing the blame to Krishna. When we suffer, how do we take responsibility? It's my own past karma which is now fructifying as the results, which I am now suffering. So what cannot be cured must be endured. Tam stitikshasva Bharata, he says. Okay, if I cannot cure it, I will endure it. If I can cure it, I will make an effort. Surely, with full vigor, I will try to make an effort. If there is going to be a damage to my body or damage to Krishna's property, I will defend and I will try to preserve them. Why? Because they are meant for Krishna's service, which is very noble, which is a very noble cause. And if it goes beyond me, what can be done? We have to accept it as Krishna's wish. That's all. Ultimately, it's in Krishna's hands. But from our side, we take the trouble. Like here you find Uttara. Somebody may tell Uttara that, you know, if Brahmastra is coming to attack your child, why don't you just be cool-headed? You know? Why you need to pray? If Krishna really wants to save your child, he will save. After all, Krishna is there as Paramatma in everyone's heart. In your heart and your child's heart also. He will say, why do you need to pray? There are some people who ask, what is the need to go to the temple? What is the need to bow down in front of God? What is the need to offer some prayers to God? Is God an ignorant person? God is there everywhere and He is aware of everything. So what is the need of offering prayer? These people are mostly impersonless because they cannot deal with the Lord as a person. Because they cannot perceive Him as a person, nor they can know themselves as proper persons. They think everything is impersonal and they cannot have such kind of exchange or reciprocation with the Lord. Despite the Lord knowing everything or being all-knowing, still a devotee would go in front of the Lord, bow down and stand up and with folded palms offer prayers to the Lord, place a petition in front of the Lord, my dear Lord, please free me from Maya, help me to control my mind and senses, save me from this danger. Because the devotee treats Krishna as a person. And the devotee knows that Krishna has ears, Krishna hears, Krishna has eyes, he sees, Krishna has emotions, spiritual emotions like living beings have emotions. Lord is not without senses, Lord is also having senses, a devotee knows. So a devotee deals with Krishna personally, and of course there are examples in the scripture where a devotee does not pray to Krishna for protection. Even without such a prayer, Lord has protected. Like you see Ambarish Maharaj, when he was faced with a great danger, he didn't pray to Krishna because he knew Krishna will protect him. Mare Krishna Rakeke, Rake Krishna Mareke. If Krishna wants to protect me, who can kill me? If Krishna wants to, that is not impersonal, but that is absolute faith in Krishna. So much faith that a person doesn't feel he is away from Krishna even for a moment. He is so much absorbed in Krishna consciousness. I was reading in the stages of development of love of God. In that, he explains as a devotee goes from anarthanavritti to nishtha, and from nishtha to asakti. In the nishtha stage itself, a devotee's faith is so firmly rooted that no impersonalist can convince a devotee that the absolute truth ultimately may be impersonal. A devotee has such a firm faith in Krishna in the stage of nishtha, that his faith in the absolute truth as personality of Godhead Krishna can never be changed. And when he goes to the asakti stage, he develops attachment for the form of the Lord, in taking darshan of the deity of the Lord. In the asakti stage, the attachment develops from the heart of the devotee. And in the ruchi stage, the reciprocation starts from the Lord's side. The Lord reciprocates with the devotee. And the devotee reciprocates with the Lord in exchange. So as this stage progresses gradually, the devotee becomes oblivious to the material world, beyond the stage of asakti. In the stage of asakti, the devotee is seeing the Lord everywhere. And his consciousness enters into Goloka, Goloka Vrindavan. Due to which, the devotee loses consciousness about things like his own self-image. What are people thinking about me? Whether people understand my greatness or not? Whether people respect me or not? Whether I was given proper food or not? Whether people are showing proper etiquettes to me? These things a devotee doesn't bother. And a devotee becomes oblivious to even the summer and winter, heat and cold, man and apaman. He transcends all these things because his consciousness enters into Goloka Vrindavan. Where so a devotee, while walking, while talking, while eating, while sleeping, he does it as a matter of duty, but actually he is not in that consciousness. Like if you give that devotee some food, he doesn't know what food he is eating. He doesn't care whether it is sweet or whether it is karela. He doesn't see the difference. He knows that something has to be put in the mouth. He puts it. He is like that. And he is ready to sleep in any place. He doesn't need a comfortable situation for living or sleeping or anything like that. So in this way, a devotee becomes oblivious to the material world completely. And his consciousness is situated in the spiritual world, in totality. In such a situation, like Ambarish Maharaj was, one sometimes doesn't even pray to the Lord for protection, even when there is a danger. See, Jadabharat, when his neck was about to be cut off by those robbers, did he pray to the Lord for help? Or did he run away? But we can't imitate Jadabharat. How many of us can allow someone to cut off our neck and not protest? Praying to Krishna is far-fetched. We will run away from there. First we will run away from there, lock ourselves in a room, then we will pray that they should not broke open the door and catch me. Isn't it? Yeah. But Jadabharat was in such a high elevated consciousness. He was such a Mahabhagavat devotee. He didn't even protest at all when he was about to be killed. So that is another type of devotee, Jadabharat or Ambarish Maharaj, those who don't even pray for protection. But praying to the Lord for protection is not considered a material desire. That's very clearly explained in Nectar of Devotion. Like, you know, Draupadi praying for preserving her purity and chastity, or Uttara praying for the protection of her child, or Gajendra crying out to the Lord in the time of danger. These are also considered as transcendental emotions of the devotees exhibited from their heart in wanting to gain the association of the Lord in such kind of crucial times. Because a devotee knows that the material world is a horrible place. It's not a place for gentlemen. And a devotee always longs for the company of the Lord. And when there is a danger, then a devotee fears that now I am going to leave the body now. Now I have to remember the Lord now. And I want to see the Lord face to face. And I want to be in His company. So a devotee may pray like that, offering a prayer like this. So here Parikshit could clearly see the form of the Lord entering into the womb to come to protect him. He was very, very fortunate. Actually, every child, like all of us, every one of us in the mother's womb, we were undergoing so many difficulties inside the mother's womb. That is explained in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And sometimes a fortunate child, Prabhupada says, not all children, sometimes a fortunate child prays that, my dear Lord Vishnu, this kind of godown or dungeon in which you have put me in, for 9 months, it is so painful, there is a scorching heat. I just want to get out of this. Please, you get me out. As soon as I come out, I will be your devotee. Please remove this inconvenience from my life. Correct? Some people pray like that, right? My dear Lord, if you can remove me from this inconvenience, then I will become your devotee. Many people pray. Actually, there are many true stories like this. Once a man was going on a fighter aircraft, flying in the sky, and he was like taking saucers. You know, some people do the saucers, you have seen, and diving. You know, Sanjay Gandhi dived and he died, you know. You know that? Because it's very dangerous to take dives. It involves a kind of life risk, you know. So this fellow was also doing that kind of diving in the sky, practicing in a fighter aircraft. Fighter aircraft means only one man, nobody else, only one person. But suddenly when he was taking dive, something wrong happened with the machine, and immediately the plane started coming down very fastly, about to crash to the ground. It was coming flying. So this man realized, now I am finished now. Because there is experience of fighter aircrafts crashing and people dying. So he prayed in his heart that, you know, now anyway I am going to die. My dear Lord, if you save me now, I will become your devotee forever. I will give this entire life to you if you protect me in this situation. So the plane came crashing to the ground. Somehow it hit a tree. And then he was constantly endeavoring to open the door and jump off, you know. So successfully he could jump out. And when he jumped out, it was a bed of water into which he jumped out, and the plane crashed to the ground and it burnt to ashes. But although it was water, still it was a heavy damage he had, because coming from such a great height, his body, you know, so many bones of his body broke to pieces. It took him almost 10 months to 1 year. You know, there were practically patches all over his body. And after 1 year, he became well. He survived. And then he came out of the hospital with a healthy body. And immediately the thought came in his mind, I had made a promise that I will give my life. So he went to one of the churches and told the father there that, I have promised God that I will give my 24 hours a day for Him. I will give my entire life. Can you please take me in your church? Father looked up and down and said, really? Our church opens only on Sundays. He said, if you want to do a 24-hour religion, I think the only place you will get that is in India. He said, you better go to India. Then that fellow came to India. And in India he was searching for a guru, going from place to place. He went to a library. He was reading several books. So one day he was confiding with the librarian, who was a lady. He was telling her, actually I am in... She was asking him, you practically take so many books from here, you are reading, who are you? And he told her the whole story, episode. When she heard it, she said, oh really? She said, my husband has taken diksha from a guru. Who can give him not 24 hours, he can give him 28 hour service. Engagement. If you really want, I can introduce you to him. And he said, welcome. So she took him and he got introduced, met that guru, and discussed with him, and he dedicated his life, and his entire life he was a sannyasi. And he left his body successfully with spiritual consciousness and went back to Godhead. You know who was his guru? It was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He became a disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So, in this way, It is very natural for the soul to take shelter of God in time of danger. Even if you read this book, what is that? Scientific Basis of Krishna Consciousness. I was reading that when the Apollo was in danger, scientists were praying. You see, scientists generally, they argue so much against God. When there is danger, even they were praying to God. They thought that now no one else can help. If there is a God, at least let him help. And they were praying. So, to pray to God at the time of danger is very natural for the soul. It's very, very natural. Even for the atheistic souls also. It's very, very natural. So, here also, Uttara is praying and Parikshit is being protected. But the beauty of Parikshit is that although all of us when we were in the womb, which we can't even remember now, we have forgotten completely, we have also prayed to Lord Vishnu that when I come out, I'll be your devotee and all that. But when we come out, you know, the illusion of this world is so powerful that we tend to completely forget God. In fact, there is a prayer in the third canto, in the ninth month when the child is about to come out, the child changes his prayer to the Lord. He says, "My dear Lord, I made a wrong prayer to you before. Now I don't want to come out." He says, "Although I said I want to come out, it seems to me that the outside world is full of maya, which is more dangerous than the scorching heat inside the mother's womb. So I would rather stay inside only." But still, by the pressure of the air, he is pushed out. And the child cries under the spell of maya when he comes out. And from there, his suffering begins again, in that particular lifetime. So, one goes into the zone of illusion in this world when one is born with a material body. So, Parikshit was not like that. He saw the Lord in the womb. Lord is revolving around him and protecting him. And when he came out, he started searching for the same Lord. That's why his name came to be known as Parikshit. One who did Pariksha of every human being, every male, whomever he saw in the midway, he would see them and check whether is he the same person I saw in the womb. So he remembered the Lord and he became a pure devotee. And it's also, Parikshit also has the glory of bringing the Srimad Bhagavatam to this world. The last 7 days of his life, he heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Shukadeva Maharaj, Shukadeva Goswami. He brought it to the world. And you will find Parikshit, every step you learn, like this verse we are reading about Parikshit. In the same manner, when Parikshit became a king also, every one of his movements is full of lessons for practicing devotees to learn from. From the lives of great devotees, we also learn how we should lead our lives. O son of Bhrigu, when the child Parikshit, the great fighter, was in the womb of his mother Uttara and was suffering from the burning heat of Brahmastra, he could observe the Supreme Lord coming to him. Thank you very much. I can take one question till another 5 minutes. Yes, sir. He is saying, in the Vedic life, you said, for people, you know, preserving life is not so important. Preserving dharma is more important, I said that, isn't it? So he's asking, in our life, is there anything that is so important a dharma, that if we don't uphold the dharma, we should give up our life? As far as I know, Prabhupada never recommended anyone to commit suicide or give up their life at any cost. Like for example, in Bhagavatam it is said, if a Vedic sannyasi, if he gives up a sannyas order and he marries, then he is called as a vantashi, you know. One who drinks his own vomit, due to which, you know, it's considered very abominable. One should give up one's life and all that is said. But for a Vaishnava sannyasi it is not said. Prabhupada, while speaking to a group of disciples, Prabhupada said, you know, people need not ridicule him or curse him or, you know, talk ill of him, because he is certainly an elevated person in consciousness. So his coming down from that order to the order of marrying someone itself is enough a lesson for him. That would pinch his heart enough. Because, you know, if you take Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, they were given different type of punishments. Like a Brahmana, you know, You just say one word to him, that would pinch him so much. He can immediately understand it. Because the Brahmana's consciousness is most fine. On the other hand, if you see Shudra, you know, everyone is punished differently. Kshatriya means you have to say a bad word to him, you know, insult him. Brahmana, you don't have to say a bad word also. You can just look at him. You stare at him with sharp eyes, he will understand. Kshatriya, you have to say a bad word to him. Isn't it? Vaishya means you have to punish him with a financial fine. Put a fine for him. Then he will realize the value. Because for him, money is very important. And a Shudra, you put him on the back of a donkey, you shave up his head and put dots all over his body, and send him all around the village. He will be still laughing. He will be laughing. He will not realize. He will not feel the pinch at all. So, a sannyasi, for example, if he leaves that order and comes down, that itself is enough a pinch for him. It will be pricking his consciousness sufficiently. So he need not be, Prabhupada said, in our society, if something like that happens, they are all Vaishnavas, then they should better get married. Like Prabhupada wrote that verse in Gajendra Moksha, you know. He wrote that verse, he said, there are many disciples to whom we are giving sannyas worldwide, and they are not able to maintain their order, and they are leaving the order and getting married, Prabhupada said. And then Prabhupada said, one should choose an element where one is very firmly fixed. Water element is suitable for a crocodile, land element is suitable for a elephant. Prabhupada said, similarly, one should choose the ashrama where one is able to have sufficient mental strength, sensual power, and spiritual stability. And one should not stop fighting against Maya. That is most important in any ashrama, whether Brahmachari ashrama, sannyasa ashrama, or grihastha ashrama. Our fight is against Maya, not just to hold on to some ashrama. Prabhupada said. So, Prabhupada has never approved of anyone committing suicide or giving up the body for any kind of deficiency in following dharma. And Prabhupada used to say, Kalau Shudra Sambhavaha. In Kali Yuga, everyone is a Shudra. So, to uplift oneself from the Shudra to a Brahmana platform is certainly something that involves tremendous endeavor. And there's a likelihood of one falling back because the situations in Kali Yuga are extremely dangerous. Like Prabhupada says, there was one Ajamil who fell down by seeing a man and woman embracing in the forest. But today you find practically all places everywhere around there are Mayaic forces. But one very important word of caution for devotees. Just because Maya is so powerful, we should not succumb to Maya and blame the influence of the age. If you blame the influence of Kali Yuga and say that, you know, you see, after all, it's Kali Yuga, you know, everyone is falling down, so my falling down is not such a bad thing. That is to escape from responsibility. Even though we are in Kali Yuga, Krishna's mercy is there, you know, Guru's mercy is there behind us, and, you know, one will be tested by the, dangerous circumstances of Kali Yuga, still one will be able to maintain control one's senses and mind and engage them in Krishna's service. It's possible. If one is slipping and falling down, there is some amount of insincerity from the part of the individual also. Because, you know, Lord will never test us beyond our ability. Surely. Like, for example, if a devotee is extremely vulnerable and weak, by putting oneself in a very strong association of devotees, a devotee can very easily overcome Maya. It's possible. You don't have to be extremely strong. But by being in association, one can be very protected. It's possible. But if one is insincere, one goes out of association and falls down, then one has to take responsibility for that. Like that. I don't think in any circumstance, although Chota Haridas pastime is said in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made that particular pastime happen in order to teach all the followers how strict they should be. But beyond using your full power, beyond using your full strictness and responsible behavior, if things happen, and then that is beyond us. Then if one has fallen, then one has to rectify. How we can rectify, one should see. And Prabhupada said, just engage in Krishna service. Kind of engage in Krishna consciousness. We have to go on. One has to keep on continuing Krishna consciousness. What else can be done? Yeah. Alright? Now it's 9:30. Yes, Sandesh Prabhu, one last question. Yeah? You had a question? मंत्रा श्रीमद् भागवतम की श्रील प्रभुपाद की और भक्तवृंद की थैंक यू वेरी मच.